Hello everyone, welcome to our video lectures, our webinars, and our practices from our Quetzalcoatl Cultural Institute. We will begin our lecture today. We're going to study today something very, very interesting and also very important. Each one of the initiates who came to Earth to give us their teachings spoke of the necessity for the birth in us of the marvelous force which can transform us and which is called love. Master Jesus of Nazareth clearly emphasized this by saying, "Love one another, and then you will prove that you are mine." Master Jesus of Nazareth did not only say to love your family, to love the people in your country, to love only the people of your region or your religion. No, he insisted and told us very clearly, love one another, and thus you will prove that you are mine. We can see these same teachings in the Talmud, Zohar, the Bible, in the Popol Vuh of the Mayas. You will also find them in the Chinese I Ching, in the Chinese sacred book, or in the Indian Vedas, or in the Germanic Eddas, and in all cultures of the world. Among the Mayas, for example, there was an extraordinary phrase, which is also the motto of our Quetzalcoatl Cultural Institute, and it is the following: Im lak esh, alak en, which means you are me and I am you. And among the Mayas, they had the habit of greeting each other with this phrase, One person would say Im lak esh, and the other will respond, "Alak en." It is therefore worth, to understand this marvelous force which all the great masters have taught us. This wonderful force that can transform the world. All the codes, laws, will not transform the world. What really can transform it is this wonderful force called love. We must know and discover, my dear friends, how this force can be born and flow within us. Because love is truly an effusion, an energetic emanation that comes from the depth of consciousness. It is not this beautiful word. It is not these beautiful written poems. It is a force that flows, a force that transforms, a force that liberates, a force that can take us out of this mud on earth and elevate us to the highest, but it is not what we think it is. Love is an energy that springs from the depth of our consciousness. But let's be clear, our consciousness today is far too dormant. So, how do you want love to arise in us if our consciousness is a prisoner, bottled up in all our different psychological defects? This force of love cannot transform us since it does not exist in us. It does not live in us. We must therefore discover the way to recover it within ourselves, to save it. And we will be able to do this only if we destroy these psychological factors which keep it prisoner. We need this force that can transform us, that can free us, get us out of this mud of the world in which we are entangled. This force truly has the capacity to make us someone different. We can see it, for example, with this little old man who suddenly falls in love. He feels this effusion through his body, this emanation which comes from the depths of his consciousness. And this energy causes its endocrine glands to start working actively. These glands produce numerous hormones in the blood systems, and these hormones revitalize it, and even this person of a certain age can start to get younger. This is the marvelous force of love. It can transform our organism. It can transform us. Really, for those who experience it, love is an energy which awakens in them marvelous faculties, extraordinary faculties, latent faculties in us that we possess, but they are dormant today. they develop, they awaken with the force of love. A loving person can suddenly say to another person, I have a feeling that in your life a person will appear for you, who will be your other half. Or say other things like that, like premonitions. This is what the wonderful force of love does. It causes those intuitive faculties to awaken in us that we already possess and which were very developed in ancient times and which today, because other faults, we have lost. Love can make us enter a state of ecstasy, even if we find ourselves far from the person we adore, far from the being we love. A photograph can be enough. A ring or a small handkerchief, just with that we can enter into ecstasy. This is what the force of love is. This force which can transform us. Regarding this, Master Samael Aumbeo, founder of contemporary Gnostic schools, tells us, a perfect marriage is the union of two beings, one who loves more and one who loves better. We can say that love is the best accessible religion, the best religion possible that we can acquire in our daily life, to all life, in a real and definitive way, is with the force of love. Why do we say that love is the best religion available to us? Because religion comes from the word religare, which means in Latin, union with God, we union with divinity. It is for this reason that the best religion, the best way, the best existing method for us to unite with the divinity is to live in a concrete and fully way with the force of love in our heart, in our life, in the facts. Words do not count, only facts count. They are the ones that are important. The beautiful words that we pronounce are wordless. They do not count. It must be demonstrated with concrete facts which really show that we are capable of loving. Love begins with a spark of sympathy. That's how it begins. We all think that we love already. But in truth, we don't love. We confuse love with fear, with dependence, with passion, and many other things. If we want love to be born within us, we must know the process to experience it. Love, therefore, begins with a spark of sympathy. It is at this moment where this magnetic outpouring can be born. With a spark of sympathy, we see a person, they are very friendly to us. We feel good with them. We feel that we understand him or her. We feel that they understand us. We can get lost in his or her gaze. We can talk and discuss for a long moment with her. And if we analyze ourselves, we will discover that there is something that compels us to be in her company. So love begins with a spark of sympathy. Then comes marriage. We get married and start living together. We have many psychological defects within us. We can say that we each have approximately 10,000 psychological defects. It is therefore difficult to understand this person, but we force ourselves. We make a lot of effort to work with his or her psychological defects. If we work on our intolerance, if we work in our anger, on our pride, our self-esteem, then this spark of sympathy, which was born some time ago, will transform, will become substantial in a strong tenderness, a force of tenderness, and tenderness is really born. We are incapable of hurting this person we love. We are incapable of hurting her, of being ironic, of comparing her with certain artists or other people we see on television, for example. We are incapable to raise our hands on the person we adore. That is the strength of tenderness. This tenderness is the result of intense inner work, and not with sweet words, but intense work, psychological work in our daily life. With the key of psychological self-observation, by discovering our own faults and feeling empathy in our own flesh with this person, by feeling what one's partners feel, by coming to think that his or her partner thinks, being able to put ourselves in the place of others. But how can we succeed in doing all this if, my dear friends, we are not even capable of being conscious of all that we are doing? How can we demand that the poor intellectual animal that we are put itself in the place of another person? We must therefore work to become conscious, and we can then project ourselves into our partner or our neighbor and try to feel what they feel. To get to this point, we have a lot of work to do. A lot of inner work, a lot of psychological work, not just saying nice words. When we are engaged and we are walking in a park or garden, if your fiancé trips and falls, we exclaim, "What is happening to you, my little sugar? You got hurt?" Then, 2, 3 years later, or 5 years later of living together, the little sugar no longer exists. And why is all this lost? What is disappearing? Why don't we keep this honeymoon forever? Because we can keep it, you know? The Aztec god of love, called Xochipilli, tells us how to keep it. You have to work on yourself. And then yes, if you work on yourself, if you apply all the techniques of Gnosis, if you leave it, because there are people here in our Gnostic studies who are adulterers, and we all have them. These adulterous egos, we all have them. Even if we have not experienced them physically. Psychologically speaking, in our mind, we commit adultery, of course. There are, therefore, in Gnosis, many superficial, empty, vain people who do not want to leave the teachings correctly and who go with other women for men, and women who go with other men and then say idiosyncrasies, meaningless things like, for example, in Gnosis, you know? In Gnosis, we are told that we must learn to love. And I don't love you. So, goodbye. See you later. Or, like, I like Gnosis, you know? But you don't. And since you have to have certain affinities, and I don't feel them with you, then chaos. These attitudes are truly absurd. We must be compatible with the partner we have. We must have affinities, and this requires a lot of intense and deep work on ourselves. Since we have been giving conference for many years, we have seen many cases, some very beautiful, others very ugly. People who want to abandon their spouse, and who moreover want to do this in the name of Gnosis. And this is insane, because Gnosis advocates for fidelity. Ask for love to be born. And unfortunately, we have seen the case of people who do not want to take into account these Gnostic teachings, who do not value Gnostic wisdom. They divorce and abandon their poor wife who followed them for so long, who gave them their youth and their life, who gave them everything. Anti spot-bellied, fat, bald men who stood around with young girls and seemed very happy? No, really, they are not happy. They end up being really very unhappy, because that is not really the path. We must conquer this force of tenderness, and later, if we do this work on the dissolution of the self, if we do this work on psychological death, if we destroy these defects, this tenderness will be transformed into adoration. This tenderness will be synthesized in adoration. That's what I'm saying. We will come to adore with all the meaning that this word has. We will come to adore this person. We will come to feel united to her. We will come to feel that we are one. We will arrive at this adoration. This is precisely what we're looking for. We must therefore begin with this spark of sympathy, and if we have lost it because of so much ego, because of so many egotistical manifestations, well, we must find it again. We must find this little spark, and this can be done with inner work. In marriage, we must achieve this complementarity, this affinity in the seven cosmic planes. We must achieve this, and it is obtained with work. It is an illusion, a fantasy, a twisted idea in our mind to believe and think that twin souls have the same taste. They like the same music, both like exactly the same things, that they were born on the same day, etc. All this is just nonsense, absurdities, fantasies. We have to be able to have this complementarity. We have to be able to have this affinity, and we will not be able to achieve this with a program on the internet or by looking for similarities in our taste. No, my dear friends, but we can achieve it with inner work. Man has his own characteristics. Woman has her own characteristics. Man is characterized by the planet Mars, and Mars represents strength, war, struggle, and we must unfortunately, we must accept that we have lost a lot of virility, a lot of virility. We have lost a lot of our splendor. We have lost a lot of our masculinity. We are becoming feminized, and that is not correct. The man must be a man. A real, very virile one. We are not saying by this that we must commit adultery, because that is not being a man. It is being an idiot. If a man is not capable of being faithful to a person, well, he's not really a man. A true man respects his partners, always and forever. We have lost our masculinity, and regrettably, women have lost a lot of their femininity. Not all of them, of course. But in general, we are gradually losing our values. The woman lost her masculinity, and lamentably, women have lost their femininity. We are all gradually losing our values. The woman has the characteristics of Venus. Venus is tenderness, love, understanding, gentleness. These are the characteristics of woman. The man is like a hurricane, and woman is like the delicious little kiss that we feel in churches, the flight of doves. These forces must be complementary. Man is not superior to woman, and woman is not superior to man. Not at all. The two are complementary. Man has the function of leading woman in what corresponds to him, and woman has the function of leading the man in what corresponds to her. And starting from this point of view, we must be complementary in these seven planes of seven cosmic planes, seven cosmic dimensions. It is not only necessary to have a physical attraction, because there are times when there is not even a physical attraction, because marriages are made for money, for the economy. And this is a real sin against Holy Spirit, because the Holy Spirit is a source of sexual energy. And if there is not even sexual attraction, then a serious crime is committed. There must not only be physical attraction, there must also be compatibility, an affinity in the mental plane. And there must be affinity in the plane of the will. There must be an affinity in the plane of the soul, in the plane of being. And this is obtained with work. There are people who are in affinity on the physical plane and in sexual attraction, but who are not compatible in feelings. So, if there is no physical adultery, then there is mental adultery. There is adultery of the mind. That is not why adultery does not exist. Tariq Kabir, Jesus of Nazareth, tells us, not only is adultery committed physically, but when we think lasciviously of a woman, or when a woman thinks lasciviously of a man, we are already committing adultery. It doesn't have to be like this. If there is a problem, it's because there is a problem in both, and we have to find out or part of the problem. Otherwise, how are we going to move forward if we are like Pilate, always trying to justify ourselves? By saying that it is the other's fault, we will never move forward in anything. Love is a very shy, elusive child, a child who leaves home very often, and it is difficult for him to come back. And why does this fierce and elusive child leave? Because of hatred. Because hatred, it is the antithesis of love. And this hatred grows in us because of resentments. There is an argument, we quarrel, and the argument passes. Okay? We make up. And the harsh words we had, where did they go? They are not lost. They went into the subconscious, and they formed in the subconscious resentments. And these resentments are hatred, and each resentment imprisons or absorbs a part of love, a part of this wonderful force of love, and love gradually becomes more and more a prisoner. And this is how love gradually disappears from our homes. We have had many arguments in our household, and they have created so much resentment. We have had hundreds, thousands of arguments, and all of them have created hundreds, thousands of resentments. And these resentments imprison love. Love is not jealousy either. There are women who say, if he is jealous, it is because he loves me. And no, my dear friends. Wise King Solomon said, jealousy is more cruel as a grave. That's what jealousy is. Jealousy is more dangerous than the fangs of a rabid dove. Jealousy is not love. Jealousy is distrust, lack of confidence. Jealousy is selfishness. Jealousy is lust. Jealousy is pride. But it is never love. If a person is jealous of their partner, it is because they do not have confidence. When we live full of jealousy, then we do not love. Jealousy is incompatible with love, like oil and water. We must learn to love, and love, it is to trust. To love is to be faithful. We also confuse self-love with love, and we must know that while we confuse love with, in order to know what love is and ensure that it is born in us. Love is not pretty words. Love springs from inner work and struggle, from contrast, from the deep sense of salvation, and we often confuse love with love. Self-love, self-esteem with love. Self-esteem, we think we love. But we don't love. We love ourselves, and we have projected ourselves into the other person, and the only thing we see in them is ourselves. When you ask someone, why do you love this person? Why do you like this person? He can answer, because she gives me candies, because she protects me, because she takes care of me, etc. She gives me. So there is no love. What we see there is extended self-love, but it is not love. We must therefore put an end to our self-esteem so that love can be born in us. Anger is something terrible that ends households. Anger destroys homes. Anger transforms a little thing into a huge thing. It turns a flea into a horse. That's a saying in Spanish. Anger generates problems in home. We see in Dante's The Sins, which caused this child who is loved, this very fierce child, to disappear from our homes. We must put an end to anger. Love is also very different from patience. Love is not patient. Yes, we agree to get married. And for the marriage to happen, there must be a sexual attraction, and of course, sexuality. It's not a sin, because it is with which we were created by divinity. God, the great architect of the universe, the great creative demiurge, Allah, Brahma, Donatur, or whatever we want to call him, created us through sexuality. And if he created us through sexuality, then sexuality is not a sin. As Francis of Assisi said, sex is like money. If it is used for good, then it is good. If it is used for evil, then it is bad. We have used sexuality in a grotesque, absurd, horrifying way. We have mixed violence with sexuality. We have spat on the sanctuary of sexuality, of love. Definitely, passion is not compatible with love either. Sexuality, yes, but not passion. Passion is like a house of cards. We seem to be very in love, but we are certainly very passionate. Because once the passion is satisfied, this house of cards falls to the ground. Then the woman or man is disappointed. This attraction disappears. The feeling disappears. It was not love. It was just passion. We must be very alert, very attentive, because passion is like a venom which blinds us, which prevents us from seeing further away than our own nose. This is what passion is. It poisons us and poisons what we are. We are able to swear that we love a person, but when the passion is satisfied, then the house of cards falls to the ground and remains despair and disillusionment. This is what we must disintegrate so that the force of love is born in us. We must also consider sexuality. Love is not fear either. We think we love our teachers or parents. We think we love, but very often we are afraid of them and we confuse this fear with respect, with love. Love is neither fear nor dependence. Often we feel dependent because our spouse provides us for us, because he brings money into the home, into our house, or because he cooks for us, because he washes our clothes and many other things, or she. She does all of this. But that is not love. It is only psychological dependence. We must put an end to fear and psychological dependence so that love arrives within us. You have to be very careful about all of that. Thank you so much. Saint Paul of Tarsus wrote in a letter to the Corinthians the following: "Even if I spoke the tongues of men and angels, if I do not have love, I am a brass which sounds, or a cymbal which sounds. That is to say, nothing. I am nothing. I am of no importance. Even if I have read many books, even though I have a lot of knowledge, that is to say, even if we have many diplomas and doctorates, all this is of no use if we do not love." And St. Paul goes even further by saying, "Even if I had the gift of prophecy, if I knew all the mysteries and possessed all knowledge, even if I had all the faith to the point of moving mountains, if I do not have love, I am nothing." In reality, he goes further than the physical. He even talks about knowing all the mysteries. But if there is no love, we are nothing, nothing at the end. "Even if I distributed all my goods for the food of the poor, and if I gave my body to the flames, if I do not have love, all this will be of no use." He says that it is good to help people, but not out of pride, or to show off one's riches, but to do it to help, because we truly love humanity. And if we don't love, if we don't have love, then it's all for nothing. St. Paul tells us something very interesting about love. Love is patient. So, love is not impatient, it is patient. Love is seen the service of others, because it is a fact. Love is, of course, in the service of others, altruistic, because when it is born inside someone, it gives them wonderful powers. Love is not envious. I'm sorry. It does not flaunt anything. It does not swell with pride. It does nothing inappropriate. Of course not. You cannot love your wife and hit her at the same time. And a woman cannot love her husband and cheat on him. Love does not seek its own interest. It does not get irritated. It does not take evil into account. Because when we love, we forgive. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Of course, we shouldn't go to the extreme. If the husband goes home and hits his wife, leaving her half dead, and she forgives him? No, that's not what we say. We talk about conflicts and different things that happen within spouses in marriage every day. We must not harbor resentment. We must not harbor hatred. We must not forget. We must forget all that. For example, we argue. "Forgive me," we say. "I'm not going to do it again." "And it's okay," say the other. "I forgive you." So the argument ends, and a year or two passes, and a new argument happens, and then we suddenly remember everything that happened a long time ago with the last argument. "So you remember the last time you said this and that to me, and you said this to me, and you did this to me. Remember, you saw your ex again last time," etc., etc. So what have we done? Are we forgiven or not? Many households could live in peace and happiness if they learned to forgive, if they were compassionate, as Saint Paul of Tarsus tells us. Love does not take into account the evil received. It does not take no pleasure in injustice, but rejoices in the truth. Love excuses all, hopes all, believes all. Love endures all. If we think about all this, we understand that we are missing many things to have this force of love. We must recover it. We must revive it in ourselves. And a celibater who is not yet married must and will have to look for this value in themselves. And for those who are married, they also need to find it. Everything that these great initiates or these great masters tells us, like Hermes Trismegistus, the three times great god Ibis of Thoth, in this emerald table, he told us because he learned about love. He learned to love. These great masters were not celibate. They did not abandon their wives. Hermes Trismegistus was also not single. They were not people who abandoned their wives or children. Never these initiates did this. In truth, Hermes Trismegistus loved, and it is for this reason that he left us in this emerald table the following. I give you this love, in which is contained all the summit of wisdom. Because ultimate love is transformed into wisdom, and wisdom into love, and the summit is what is highest, purest, and is love. In love is contained all the summit, the summum of wisdom. This is what we said. When astronomers see in their telescope a collision between two worlds, they exclaim, two planets have collided, they have united, they have merged. But in reality, these two planets, which came together by the force of love, and they became one world. We also see this marvelous force of love in the infinite cosmos. This force supports the planets. This force supports the universe. And it is this force which must be born in our earth. In India, this force of love was symbolized by the swan Kalahansa. It is represented by these swans that we see on the lake. There are three important things in life, my dear friends: birth, death, and marriage. When a swan dies, its partner dies of sadness because love feeds on love. We should learn in school how to marry properly, you know. There should be subjects in school that will teach us how to live with our partner, how to live in our marriage. That will teach us to see the faults that destroy households, all the causes that destroy households. But fortunately, we have gnosis, and with it we learn all this. With it we learn what marriage is and its importance. Let's remember, Noah built an ark. An ark into which he brought all the pairs of animals to save them from the slaughter which occurred in Atlantis and which ended with the universal flood. This ark is only the mysteries that Gnosis gives us for the perfect marriage, to conquer this wonderful marriage. This is why they were a couple of animals, because we are also animals, because we are not yet men. A couple of animals climbed into the ark. An ark means arcane, and arcane means mystery. So marriage is an extraordinary, wonderful mystery that we must learn to live. The kiss, my dear friend, which some see in a morbid way, is, in reality, the mystical consecration of two souls eager to express in a sensitive way what they experience internally. And the sexual act is in itself the inherence of love. That is to say, that two substances become only one, and that we no longer see the difference between one and the other. That is the inherence. The sexual act is done with dignity and not like an animal, because nowadays we perform the sexual act like animals, and sometimes much worse than animals. My dear friends, remember the time of the Japanese, the geishas in Japan, who prepared for the sexual act. They were polyglots. They learned the art of essences and perfumes. And when they wanted to bring their husband in bed for the sexual act, they first took him into a crystalline fountain filled with flowers. They coated him with perfumes of oriental wisdom. Then, like a ceremony, like a religious ceremony, she performed the amorous act. This act of love was also carried out at the time of Lemuria. It was an act during which the mystical and erotic were united, the mystical and the erotic aspect of life. All this is really possible. We must stop copulating in a vulgar and animal way in order to discover that the sexual act is the consubstantialization of love, which means that we become love in our psychophysiological reality. That is say, in our entire organism, which is not only matter, but is also psychic, emotional and mental. This is what we must achieve. Man and woman are like two columns of the temple of King Solomon. These two columns, Jachin and Boaz, wisdom and love, must not be too close or too far so as that a ray of light may pass between them. Victor Hugo, a great humanist poet, tells us this in this very beautiful poem entitled Man and Woman. Victor Hugo begins by saying, Man is the highest of creatures and woman is the most sublime of ideals. Victor Hugo continues by saying very beautiful sentences about man and woman, distinguishing them. Man is one thing and woman is another. Man is not higher than woman, and woman is not higher than man. The man is like a sanctuary, the woman is the tabernacle. Victor Hugo tells us that man thinks and woman cries. There it is. It is really very beautiful what this poem tells us. It ends, Victor Hugo ends this poem by saying, man places himself where the earth ends. Women feels very important when reading this. But Victor Hugo adds, a woman places herself where the heaven begins. We could also say the words of Master Samael that woman is the most beautiful thought of the Creator, made flesh, blood, and life. And when we desecrate woman with morbid, lustful looks, we find ourselves frankly on the path of decadence, of degeneration. Friedrich Nietzsche also tells us something very interesting about woman in his book entitled Thus Spoke Zarathustra. He wanted to retire to a cave in the mountains and live there for 10 years, isolated from humanity and people. Friedrich Nietzsche tells us that he, Zarathustra, lived for 10 years alone, meditating and reflecting. Every morning, the sun rose and he looked at it for 10 years. It is very symbolic because the number 10 in Kabbalah represents lives and deaths and returns. This means that for many years, one can live one's life and suddenly one can feel a worry, an attraction for the path. And so, after these 10 years had passed, Zarathustra declared as he headed towards the sun, O magnificent star, it has been 10 years since you appeared every day in my cave, and if it were not for you, for my eagle and my serpent, I would have already grown tired of myself and my shelter. This is what Zarathustra declared after 10 years spent alone in his cave. He then came out of it and went down the mountain. Then an old man who had seen him 10 years before climbing the mountain, said to him, Zarathustra, but where are you going, Zarathustra? The latter replied, I'm going towards humanity. I love humanity. I want to return to them and help them. And the elders said to him, Don't go back. Is it by chance here with my sons? This prevents me from loving humanity and God, who is my God. Zarathustra replied to him, I'm going towards humanity. I'm going towards it because I love it. And the elder then said to him, taking a whip, which he put in a white cloth, if you go towards woman, and this is very interesting because many people have very misunderstood the words of Nietzsche in this book. So, the old man said to Zarathustra, if you go where the woman is, don't forget the whip. Yes, that's what he said. Obviously, many of those who read Nietzsche really misinterpret these words. Many thought that Nietzsche was recommending him to beat the woman with a whip or something like that. Friedrich Nietzsche was a very gentle person and loved woman very much. I would never have recommended whipping or beating her, as some thought. The whip thus was not intended for women. The whip was for him. The whip was for the man. Which means that the whip represented the will. The whip represents the lemma, the willpower. This whip must be directed against oneself, not against the woman, but against oneself. That is to say, that we must manage to control ourselves, to dominate ourselves, that we must dominate our animal passions, we must dominate our bestial passions. That's what Friedrich Nietzsche meant. And we agree with him, with the words of the old man in this book. Thus spoke Zarathustra, if you go where the woman is, do not forget the whip. We must use our will to dominate ourselves and respect the woman and not look at her in a lustful or morbid way. Not denigrate her. Seeing woman, the most beautiful thought of the Creator made flesh, blood, and life. You know, if all human beings live loving, being full of love, the venom of vipers will disappear. Even the venom of vipers will disappear. Because love is a force that transforms, a force that can get us out of the mud. When the Spaniards arrived on Mexican lands, when the conquerors arrived on Mexican lands, they were very surprised to see in the temples, on the altars, the cross. The cross was already present here in Mexico among the Mayans and the Aztecs because it is a universal symbol. The conquerors were very surprised to see this cross on the altars, but it did not represent a symbol of sacrifice, as they reported. The Mayans and Aztecs saw the cross as a symbol of redemption, because the cross is the symbol of the union between man and woman. The vertical wood represents the masculine forces, and the horizontal wood represents the feminine forces. Thus, when we learn to love, when we truly arrive to love, we transform ourselves, we redeem ourselves. This famous elixir that so many medieval alchemists were looking for is this force of love, the elixir of long life. Love transforms us radically, completely, physically, emotionally, and spiritually, but only true love can do it. Such a being, the god of love, the Aztec god of love, Xochitl in Nahuatl means flower, and Pili means mane. Xochitl, therefore, means mane flower. And it is impossible that his spouse, Xochiquetzali, his wife, does not exist, of course. In the Nahuatl doctrine, in the Aztec doctrine, most of the gods, almost all of them, come in pairs. So, in matrimony, if we have Xochipi, the god of love, we have Xochiquetzali, the goddess of love. When we studied the doctrine of the Aztecs, with god of the songs of love and beauty, of joy and agriculture, we know this, that they had this formula to preserve the honeymoon for always, forever. For those who have already lost it, find it so that it lasts a lifetime. Would you like that? Would you like to live your honeymoon for the rest of your life? Of course we do. The wisdom of old people tells us how we can get there, and Xochipilli gives us these teachings to keep this honeymoon forever. It is easy? Not at all. It is difficult? Yes. It is very difficult to follow the doctrine of Xochipilli. Only essences, truly courageous souls, can follow this doctrine. This is why, with good reason, they speak to us of eagle knights, men and women, male and female, eagle knights, tiger knights of Nahuatl wisdom. This doctrine is not made for the weak. This doctrine is not made for those who cry all the time and who always complain about their spouse. No, it is intended for true warriors, and we will explain to you what this doctrine consists of. What does Xochipilli tell us about preserving this honeymoon? Well, it could be summed up in the following words. Attention. Man, if your wife cries, kiss her tears. If your wife is angry, if she flashes, screams, shut up and stay silent. Don't answer her. Understand her. Love her. And if she cries, kiss her tears. Do you, the married men, listening to us, think you can do that? Well, here is this doctrine of Xochipilli. It is the doctrine of the Mayans, and it is in the Inlac Edge, Alak En. You are me, and I'm you. It is also the doctrine of Master Jesus when he says, love one another, and you will prove that you are mine. It is necessary to understand in order to be able to love. It is necessary to feel what our wife feels. This anger that she has a beginning and an end. One must learn to be impassive in all senses of the word, internally and externally, without clenching one's jaw or clenching one's fist while swallowing one's anger. What Xochipilli tells us is that we learn to love, that we learn to understand, that we learn to put ourselves in the place of our wife, and that we know what this anger has, that this anger has a beginning and will have an end. And if we remain impassive, calm, internally and externally, our wife will understand that her husband is someone very special, someone noble, someone unequalable. And then the remorse. And remorse is a wonderful feeling because it is above any discussion or agreement or disagreement. It is above all that. And this force of remorse will make her love her husband, that she will respect and adore him. Xochipilli also said to the woman, woman, if your husband comes upset from work, if he comes with frowning, love him. Give him something to eat. Give him water so he can wash, or give him a bath. Give him a bath. And the angrier he gets, the more you'll have to love him. You, the woman, who were listening today, do you believe that you will be able to do this? No. Some will say, how am I going to let this happen? We are not telling you to give up, nor are we saying that you should let yourself be beaten. And we have said that before, you will never say that. We will never agree to a woman being beaten, never. But we must learn to dispel each other's mistakes. Nobody is perfect. Nobody is perfect. And if we are devils, my dear friends, we will have a devil as our spouse. And if you women are devils, then you will have devils as your husband. The love is the love. A level of being always attracts the same level of being. And as children, we will have what? Little devils. That's the reality. So you must really like and love the little devils that we have as children. Yes, of course. And you have to give them the life, to give the life for them. Of course. No one denies it. But we have to learn to dispel other people's mistakes. We have to learn to put ourselves in other people's shoes. We have to learn to understand. And Xochitl Piyi says that if we can put this into practice, if we really do, then the husband or woman will understand. We are not saying that they let themselves be done. Understand that we are saying that we must learn to love. Love is understanding. To love is to put yourself in the husband's place. It is to feel that he had a hard day at work, that he was perhaps in the full sun all day, that he got hurt or earned very little money and there are problems with the bills and he doesn't know how he's going to get there, etc. This is what Xochitl Piyi tells us. Learn to understand your husband. Understand your wife. Maybe she also works to help us. And she works all day until she had to take care of the screaming children, of the house, of cooking. And here comes the husband who arrives at the house with his dirty shoes and who makes the whole house dirty while his wife was just cleaning everything. Xochitl Piyi tells us to put ourselves in the place of others. In the place of the loved one. Learn to feel what he feels. Learn to think what he thinks. And learn to be her. And she learned to be him. And that is sacrifice. And this is the strength of love. My friends, to love. How great is to love. Only great souls can and know how to love. That was the lecture for today. For the bibliography, we are going to recommend you the book Fundamental Education and the conference that we have just that we have in the website, Marriage and Love. You can see it in the section of lectures, material, works, and books by Master Samael Aumbeor. And the next level. After the antechamber level, you can enter into the first chamber. And over there, we would recommend you the Love Perfect Marriage by Master Samael Aumbeor and also the lecture Love and Sex. Dear friends, thank you so much for being with us today. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.